With prayer wheels and a Buddhist temple, you'd be forgiven for thinking that we've gone to somewhere in Asia. But we've actually come to the Southern Republic of Kalmykia, which, believe it or not, is in the European part of Russia. Saur, what did we just see there? It seemed to combine aspects of ritual, dance, and theatre. Talk us through it.
You saw the Tulpan State Academic Ensemble of Kalmykia Song and Dance performing a religious dance. It was a version of the Buddhist Cham ceremony. The famous Cham ceremony is performed by Buddhist monks, mostly in Tibet. But chams are often replicated in Russia's Buddhist republics as well, by which I mean are Kalmykia, Buryatia, and Tuva. There's some Buddhist presence in Altai as well. We only imitate them and try to reproduce what the monks do through artistic means.
So it's more of a dance.
What we do is more like a concert. It's a dance that follows its own storyline. What you just saw was images of gods, the protectors. They are depicted as wrathful deities, but in fact their function is to chase evil spirits away and protect followers of Buddhism. You also saw servants of those deities. According to the storyline, there's a battle between good and evil on the path to enlightenment. In essence, Buddhism is about resistance to all kinds of temptation, escape from suffering, and gaining enlightenment.
And who do the dancers transform into when they don these fabulous costumes and headgear? Who do they represent?
When the dancers transform into these deities and go on stage, they obviously try to channel the meaning of the Cham ceremony. But it can never fully convey the image created by Buddhist monks because, as far as I know, they go into a tantric state before dancing. It's a hypnotic condition.
How do you train to become a Cham dancer? And is there any particular way that you prepare for such a dance, both physically and mentally?
This dance is more mentally than physically demanding. All performers must make sure their thoughts are pure before going on stage, so that they can share their positive energy with the audience.
Now, Saur, I'm no expert, but the moves didn't seem to be the most complicated to me. I'm sure that's not the case, and that's just down to my untrained eye, but they do seem to be quite repetitive, is that so?
These moves reflect the hierarchy. First, the deity's servants appear, followed by a scene where the deities fight evil spirits. Each move has a meaning.
Now, they say that the Cham dance bestows benefits on both the dancer and the viewer when it's performed. How does that work, especially when the music takes a dark turn and the dancing becomes kind of aggressive?
This dance helps chase away evil spirits. Can you chase them away with a lyrical melody? Aggressive sounds are probably better suited for that and for clearing the path to enlightenment.
Kalmykia is the only predominantly Buddhist region in Europe. Traditional pagodas and hurules make it hard to believe that you're still in central Russia. We've come to the main Buddhist temple in Elista to meet its guardians. Oh, lovely to meet you. Thank you for finding the time for speaking to us today. Now, they say that every family in Kalmykia contributed in some way to the construction of this magnificent temple here, and that it was built in just 9 months. Why was it such a hurry?
First off, this is the central Buddhist temple of the Republic of Kalmykia. It's called the Golden Abode of the Buddha Sakyamuni. The name was given to the temple by His Holiness, the 14th Dalai Lama.
Can you please talk me through some of the symbolism behind the decorative elements of the temple, please?
Around the temple, You see the statues of 17 great pandits or masters of Nalanda University, which existed in India. They are considered the great commentators of the words of the Buddha, who revealed their meanings and made them more accessible to a general audience. That helped people practicing Buddhism understand its teachings and philosophy without hindrances. We also have 108 drums around the temple.
Why 108?
That probably has to do with the 108 volumes containing the words of the Buddha, the things he taught his disciples after he gained enlightenment. His disciples wrote down his teachings and came up with 108 volumes. The number 108 is symbolic for Buddhists. So, these drums contain a large number of Buddhist prayers, mantras, and power is said to be released when these drums are moved. Thus, positive energy and virtue are accumulated.
I notice the temple also has these eight symbols, these golden symbols in circles around the sides. What do they mean?
We have eight auspicious symbols. The parasol represents protection of the disciple's mind against things that could darken it. It's wisdom and good deeds that shield the mind. The two golden fish symbolize freedom from all obstacles and problems. The treasure vase symbolizes the accumulation of virtue, prosperity, and spiritual development. The lotus flower stands for purity. The victory banner represents victory over negative emotions. And the wheel symbolizes the path to enlightenment and nirvana.
You can't help but notice that the fences around the temple are covered in thousands of multicolored flags. Who put them there and what do they mean?
These are prayer flags put up by believers. They're covered in them, and as they flutter in the wind, they're supposed to spread positive energy and activate the prayers. Let's see what's inside the temple.
That sounds good to me. In the hustle and bustle of the 21st century, meditation seems to be undergoing something of a resurgence. How do you do it properly, and what are the benefits of it?
If you want to master meditation, you need to start by listening, contemplating, and understanding. Meditation must be rooted in knowledge. We often get enchanted by life itself. We think that life is something permanent. When changes happen, we can really get disturbed because our consciousness is not prepared for them. However, analysis allows us to perceive the nature of these events. When we do it, our consciousness becomes wiser. We get wiser with knowledge, so these external events don't affect us that much. By using meditation, we can work against all sorts of negative states. Different themes of meditation serve as different antidotes. Over time, our consciousness gradually masters this skill. We can say that we achieve wisdom and the special purity of consciousness, free from any constructs such as egocentrism or anger. You can reach this state.
Well, maybe I should start practicing. Thank you very much for giving me a glimpse into the world of Buddhism here in Kalmykia. Thank you. Outside the city boundaries, you'll find endless steppe, and the Kalmyks have adapted their way of life to these difficult conditions. The food in Kalmykia is also a reflection of its landscape and the nomadic heritage of its people, and even the tea isn't what we used to. You normally make tea with sugar, not with salt. Are you sure you're doing it right?
Kalmyk tea has traditionally been made with salt. Kazakhs add sugar, but Kalmyks have always added salt.
Why with salt?
Because it's thought that salt helps retain moisture inside your body, which prevents you from dehydration in our hot climate.
Okay. And Is the cuisine in Kalmykia predominantly meat-based?
Meat is the main ingredient of Kalmyk cuisine. You can't have Kalmyk cuisine without it.
And is that why you make your tea with meat stock and not just with water?
Yes, our ancestors used to brew tea with meat stock. It was more of a soup than tea. We had special Kalmyk thermos bottles, and a herdsman could take some tea with him to keep him full.
Now, you don't just use tea leaves with it. You have a whole bouquet of spices. What else do you make your tea with?
In fact, there are very few spices in Kalmyk cuisine. We add bay leaves and nutmeg to make the flavor of Kalmyk tea more interesting.
Okay, How long does the tea have to boil for before it's ready?
Not long. After it starts to boil, we add some milk.
Is that camel milk?
We did use camel milk in the past, but now it's cow milk.
Okay. Phew.
We add some salt. You can use some more. Now, nutmeg. It provides a tangy note. You scrape it like this. A special tangy flavor for our Kalmyk tea. And now for the last touch, butter. We add it to make tea more filling. I melt it.
So I know you've got to stir the tea 99 times. Why so many times? What's the significance of that number?
Yes, the custom is to stir the tea a lot. 99 times. First, it makes it rich in oxygen, which is good for you when you drink it. Why 99 times specifically? Because we, as Buddhists, believe that there are 55 good spirits and 44 evil spirits. So the number 99 is a reminder that we're aware of them.
What happens if you lose count?
Well, honestly speaking, we just keep stirring it, and then we say 97, 98, 99. That's it, our tea is ready.
You're cheating. What other rituals do you have when you're serving tea?
There's a custom where the first cup of tea goes to the altar. Our tea is ready, it's boiling. So before we taste it, we pour the first cup and put it out on the altar as an offering to Buddha. The second cup naturally goes to our guest.
Wow, what an honor. Thank you very much.
Here you go.
It smells a bit like porridge.
Yes, like milky porridge.
Mm. It's very hot. I mean, it's certainly different to how we drink tea in the UK. I'm not too sure it'd catch on there. But yeah, it's not bad. Thank you very much.
You're supposed to drink it when it's hot. It can get very cold in our steppes. The wind can be very chilly. So it's supposed to be scalding hot.
You say your music's like a metaphysical journey, an escape from reality for the listener. I guess that begs the question, where to?
The idea behind our music is that it's a journey of an Oirat Kalmyk warrior outside space and time. As for an escape, we now live in a digital high-tech reality. We use technology too, since we play electronic music, but we combine it with ethnic instruments and channel our cultural background to provide an escape into our historical past, as seen through the prism of modernity. Or maybe to use the past as a means of understanding the present and travel the road of cultural evolution.
And I guess that's the reason behind your image of a Kalmyk warrior, because I wouldn't necessarily say that a Kalmyk warrior and electro-punk music is the most obvious of combinations.
It's simple. This is a somewhat obvious combination because the Kalmyks have a rather belligerent history. It's a story of survival in the steppes, starting from Dzungaria and all the way to here where we live now. And electropunk helps transform this aggressiveness into positive waves of music. It's benign aggression, if you will.
And what are your songs about? Do they include aspects of Kalmyk folklore as well?
Of course, as I said, the national part of our music comes from this Kalmyk background. It's our foundation, our spirit, our history. We give a voice to hundreds upon hundreds of authors and folk musicians. But again, we see their legacy through the prism of the present and our own idiosyncrasies.
And tell me about the legend that inspired the song that you just performed for us.
There's an intro to the track Wormwood, which helps listeners become completely immersed in the song. Here's how it goes. Those who have ever smelled Kalmyk wormwood will want to return again and again to breathe the air of our steppes and feel their spirit. Because the smell of wormwood is everywhere. Every time we go on tour or anyone from these parts goes away somewhere, we remember this scent, which makes us yearn for it. As a young boy, every time we traveled, my granddad would always take some wormwood. If I felt motion sickness, he would rub some wormwood between his fingers and give it to me to sniff. That scent always picked me up, hence the association with freshness and authenticity.
Well, it's certainly fresh today.
Smells like home.
Yes, exactly. Now, your songs have a very sort of hypnotic, mesmerizing effect. What causes that? And is it something to do with the Kalmyk national instruments here?
If we only wrote electronic music samples, we'd be like everyone else. The internet is full of samples. But where would our identity be? Our national Kalmyk instruments help create the mood that sets us apart from other musicians. And our use of electronic music and the genres and subgenres we work in make us different from other Kalmyk bands. This mix, this cocktail, makes us grin. At the same time, all these things unite us with our environment. What we do fits naturally with the steppe, even though it's electropunk.
And by mixing traditional music and giving it this electropunk modern twist, are you looking to popularize Kalmyk music in general?
By mixing folk music with modern genres such as electropunk, we popularize our culture, but we also try to channel the way people living in Kalmykia today see the world. We try to show how we live, given our historical background.
And, well, this should have probably been my first question. What's behind the name Khagrin? What does it mean?
It's quite interesting. In Kalmykia, parents often give children two names, an official one, which will be on your ID, and another one used within the family. When we were thinking of a name for the band, I asked Victoria if she had a second name.
I've got four names, yeah. Peter, Ian, Frederick, Scott.
And she said yes, it's Khagrin, in honor of her grandma. That's when it all came together, because the Kalmyk name for our people is Hung or Hungut. Also, we may shout Hadris to dancers to cheer them on. So the root Ha is important. Hung, Hadris, and Khagrin all have Ha in them. It made perfect sense.
Ruslan, thank you very much for performing for us today and braving the cold step.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Oh.